Missing this?
I remember Ollie texted me Solskjaer. One or two people would get hold of my number, unfortunately, and he would text me.
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
I think that finally break and dump the rest of the county, because this is a solely Grey only thing.
OTB AM's Mount Rushmore, live every weekday at 7:30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. The OTB Podcast Network.
With a 12-length lead in the derby, chased by Khalifa Sat in second, Oran Navid. Is this leader going to come back? Cameco Gold Maze, and then Max Vega and Mogul. 2.5 furlongs left to cover. Emmett McNamara gets to work on Serpentine now. He's still got 8 or 10 lengths over Khalifa Sat. Oran Navid down the outside. Cameco is trying to stay on behind these. A furlong and a half left for the leader, the last home. Serpentine still by 8 to 10 lengths over Khalifa Sat, Oran Navir, Mogul and Cameco, and Serpentine is not stopping. He's made it all. He's out clear all the way. It's 6 or 7 lengths still, and Serpentine for a remarkable win in the Investec Derby.
Yes, it's not every day you win the Epsom Derby, so we're delighted to welcome Limerick man to the show, Emmett McNamara. Emmett, how you doing?
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks a million for having me on, guys.
Hey, congratulations. Amazing.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable weekend. It's a commentary I'll never get sick of hearing, and a replay I'll never get sick of watching. So just a fantastic weekend, and delighted to be part of the history of such a prestigious race now as well. So it's fantastic.
25-1 winner. Generally shock amongst racing people at what transpired. So we've discovered a new tactic. You just start quickly, stay out in front, and then just keep going really quickly, and you tend to win the race.
Yeah, it's funny. Ruby Walsh made the comment on Saturday evening that I kind of did it the hard way, that I had done it the hard way. Some people were making that comment, but he made the point that it's actually the easiest way to do it is to actually make the run, and you can set your own pace and you can do your own things, and you're not worried about anyone else getting you tight or looking for room at any point. You know what I mean? You're your own man, but unfortunately, you don't always have the horse to do it, but I did on Saturday, so it was fantastic that it worked out so well.
So to what extent did you know you had the horse to do it in advance? Because really, I'd say the vast, vast majority of the audience watched the first half of that race and figured that you and Serpentine were the pacemaker.
Yeah, I mean, I was as impressed as anyone by Serpentine's win in the Curra, but I suppose myself, I probably didn't have a huge amount of confidence until I spoke to Aidan on Tuesday, and further on into Wednesday, Thursday, and later on in the week when we finally discussed the race on Saturday morning. But as the time got closer, he seemed to be more confident that the horse would come out of the Curra well, and that if he could get in a nice rhythm for the first half of the race and do things right, that the second half, once you'd kind of filled him up, that he would stay galloping and he'd take a lot of catching if things worked out that way, and thank God they did.
At what stage did you realise, hang on a second here, Serpentine's not slowing up and I've got a big old gap behind me? I mean, are you looking over your shoulder? Do you know at all times how far ahead of the pack you are? Or do you just try and ride according to your own pace? Give us your process across the race, during the race.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I like when I'm in front not to look around if I can avoid it, because if you're well in front, you're inclined to start out yourself and think if you've gone too fast. If they're right up behind you and you're on a horse that you know stays well, you're thinking, if I don't have them stretched out, have I gone too slow? So you're just kind of hoping that your own pacing of the race is right and that you're kind of getting it right. And I suppose you just have to commit it and have confidence that's happening. But when a horse doesn't pull, or when they're not lazy, when they're just in a nice rhythm like that, it's easier to judge the pace on them. So look, I got an armchair right off the horse on the day. He was beautifully prepped by Aidan, and he was on song for the biggest day. He had him in the peak of condition.
And so there, you felt, I presume then, that you were judging the pace quite nicely. You were happy with how you were going around at all times, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, like, I think those sectional times or whatever will show that while he was going a nice even gallop, he was comfortable, you know what I mean? So some horses aren't comfortable going that pace, that tempo, but he was comfortable doing it. So all you can do is ride each individual horse rather than thinking about actual times. It's just to do things in your own comfort zone. And he was doing that. and he was able to stretch off it then from kind of when he met the downhill run.
And how do you judge Emmett that he's comfortable?
You can just hear them. Sometimes the horse's breathing will be quite, you know, rough, or it, you know, they'll sound like they're struggling to go at the pace they're going. But his breathing was nice and easy. He was relaxed. He was in a nice rhythm. He kept pricking his ears every now and then. And you know, when they're doing that and having a little look around, their ears aren't pinned back in their head, that they are doing things well within themselves. And there, I suppose, the kind of things you're looking out for when you're going along, you know, to know whether you're going too fast or too slow.
And did you pick up the pace then on the way towards home?
Yeah, that was kind of it. So you kind of, I hadn't ridden Epsom, but I had walked up with Aidan a few years ago when we were there. He brought us over. Here, Golden Horn won the race. And I was lucky to walk up with him that day and get a good insight into the track. Walked around with his team of jockeys that day, and then walked it again on Saturday. And in fairness to Shamie Heffernan, he walked it with me. And at every furlong point, I was saying, look, you might like to be here, you might like to be there. And he had his own race to ride, but for someone who was inexperienced on the track, he was brilliant for me. And the same on Sean T on Sunday as well. I got to spend a fantastic weekend with him and get an insight into how he rides these races. And he was brilliant for me. So even though I hadn't ridden the track before, I felt like I had a good kind of lay of the land, you know. Mm.
These are strange times we're living through. Obviously, there weren't tens of thousands of people roaring you around the track, and you had a bit of a lead. It must have been deathly quiet at certain parts of this, you know, one of the biggest races of your life.
Yeah, it was, again, like that time when I was over there a few years ago. The whole infield was packed, and when we were walking the track beforehand, there was people climbing in over the rails, kind of trying to talk to Aidan and the jockeys that were with him that day and get his insight into the race and that kind of thing. But it was deathly quiet when we were walking the track, and obviously as well in the race as well. So my horse is not an excitable type of horse or anything like that, but in some ways it might have suited him that there wasn't a crowd there on the day, because, you know, you don't know how it'll excite some horses or upset them or whatever, you know. But he just had a free run the whole way around. But he's a horse with a very nice, kind temperament. I can't imagine it would have fazed him anyway. But it just, I suppose, added to the whole kind of, I think the word I used was the other day, kind of the surrealness of the whole thing. An empty stand, no one around me during the race. And, you know, the fact that we still finished 5.5 lengths clear, I didn't see a horse until we pulled up, you know. So it was deathly quiet. But again, it didn't take a massive amount away from the occasion for me. I was still aware when I was going by that winning post on my left-hand side at the line that how important it was, you know. Mm.
So you've been involved with Coolmore now for 6 years, I think. Do you know Serpentine well? Would you ride out on Serpentine on different mornings?
Well, usually we'd have a few horses that I'd have about three lots every morning. So usually they'd have kind of a similar three horses every morning. But then on those particular lots, then you might jump up on five or six different workers and that kind of thing. So I don't ride Serpentine as one of my three lots. That's Ermine, and for the last week before he ran, it was Alan Crow. So they ride him out every morning. But I'd have sat in him in a couple of bits of work at different points just for a couple of minutes at a time. And he was always a lovely, straightforward horse, big, powerful horse with a big engine. But he was obviously still a little bit unexposed. And like, we don't work them over a mile and a half at home on a kind of an unconventional track like Epsom. So, you know, he wouldn't... It took the likes of that challenge to get, you know, the best out of him. He wouldn't work over that far or anything at home. But it's only when you go that mile and a quarter or a mile and a half with a big, powerful stare like them that you really see what they're made of. So even though he'd have given you a good feel at home, he's obviously a far better horse in the track where he can really show what he's made of.
And it continues this extraordinary run of Galileo's progeny. I mean, it's just remarkable. I mean, I'm sure he's wrapped up in cotton wool and everyone gets down and says a prayer to him every morning. And, you know, it's hard to even put a value on Galileo at this stage. Why was Serpentine so undervalued at 25-1 or underfancied? I mean, it sounds like you had a real feel that there could be something here. And Aidan O'Brien said as well, I mean, he did say, to be fair, it's unbelievable, but he added the point that, you know, Serpentine has pedigree and we always thought he would stay well. So there was an inkling there that wasn't shared across the racing public. Why do you think that was?
I suppose it was the fact that he'd only actually won a maiden, and it's such a huge step up. Like, it's been a crazy year. Like, usually you'd run those horses in maidens, they'd win their maiden, then you'd go for a little trial, you'd find out where you stand with them, And in a normal year, he would have kind of gone through something in, you know, he'd have ran in a group race before he ran in here, and you'd have a slightly better idea. But the year that was in it, he was coming in off the back of a maiden win. So, you know, even though he had such a fantastic pedigree, even though he was trained by Aidan O'Brien, you know, I think you couldn't have him at any shorter than 25-1, have him coming just from a maiden. And I suppose the fact that Emmett McNamara was riding him then as well, people were thinking Aidan O'Brien is well able to train one of these winners. John Magner is well able to own them, and all the Coolmore team, Mr. Tabor and Smith, but maybe Emmett McNamara is not able to win a Derby riding him. So possibly that had something to do with the price too.
So, well, that brings me on to the next point. This is your biggest day in the saddle, isn't it? I mean, this is one of those races that even non-racing people know. This is a race, I suspect, you grow up dreaming of winning. So put this into context for us, maybe for people not as familiar with your career, what a win like that does. I mean, it transforms it in some respects.
Yeah, look, it's I suppose forever going to be an Epsom Derby winning jockey now, which
exactly,
sounds
yeah.
even ridiculous to say it, you know what I mean? And I won't be seeing notions about myself, but it's obviously a hugely prestigious race with a massive history of some of the kind of the world's best jockeys, best trainers, horses having won it, and some of the top stallions. So obviously I knew how big a deal it is. I watched it every year since I was a kid. I remember the first year I watched it that I remember really well. I was down in my auntie Fiona's house, and I remember watching Galileo with Mick Canaan win. It was Aidan O'Brien's first win as a trainer, if I'm right in saying that. And just the whole thing about it, I mean, the crowds, the everything, you just got a sense what was that this is the race to win if you can win it, if you're a flat jockey. And I was always, even though I was brought up in a jump race in the yard, I was kind of always fascinated by flat racing. And so I was always aware, I suppose, of just how big it was. And to win it was just fantastic.
Yeah, probably won't sink in properly for a while, because I know you're son of trainer Eric, and you made your way in the pony circuit and then graduated to Coolmore and turned pro in 2008. Why flat racing? What is it about flat racing that attracted you or piqued your interest, do you think?
I don't know. I suppose maybe something to do with just, I suppose, the international aspect of it as well. Like, it's so worldwide, this fantastic racing in Hong Kong and Japan and Australia and America and all these places. And it's just, you know, it's such an international sport on the flat. Maybe it's not so much over jumps, but just the thoughts of being able to travel and win all those big races, kind of, I was always hoping that it might happen when I was a kid watching Mick Canaan and Marta and Frankie and these boys doing it. So I suppose that was kind of a peak my interest in the flat racing. But obviously, look, I'm still mad about jump racing as well. To ride a Cheltenham Festival winner just would be unbelievable as well. That obviously won't be happening to me. It might happen to my little brother, Connor. And it might hopefully happen for my dad someday as well. But it was kind of always flat racing for some reason was my first love. I don't know why I put the finger on it, but it just was.
And have you had to be very patient? I mean, there's obviously a pecking order. And Serpentine went off at 25-1, which, you know, suggests there is a pecking order. So have you had your years with Aidan O'Brien having to take what comes your way and maybe not always getting the rise you want? Is that just the nature of your place in the racing world?
Yeah, well, like, I mean, when I first started with Aidan O'Brien, I went there for a job riding out. I wanted to be part of the team. The first day I went in there, he said to me, and I agreed to go and work there and was offered the job down there, he said to me, look, hold on to your license. I can't promise you any rides. He says, but if some come your way, he said, it'd be nice to keep your license, hold your license right away. He said, any day you want to go racing, there's no problem leaving here early. So I was very supportive of that. And like I said, he made me no promises, but in fairness to Aidan, he's always shown an unbelievable loyalty to his jockeys over the years, ever before I started there. And I knew if I went down and worked hard and you know, I tried my best for him, that my name would be in the hat. And if it was drawn out for one of those rides, one or two days, happy days. And as it's turned out, I've been lucky enough to ride an Epsom Derby winner for him, Group 2, Beresford and a Group 3, along with a few other winners. So, like, it's been a brilliant few years there. And Aidan and his family and all the team at Coolmore have just been fantastic to me. In fairness, I can't thank them enough.
Yeah, well, that sounds like it's worked out brilliantly from that first conversation. And how many rides might you get across a season then?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even count them up at this stage. I don't even think about it, to be honest with you. Not a massive amount, but if they can be quality rather than quantity, I won't be complaining.
Okay. Okay, so that does put in perspective what you've managed to do here. Transformational, really. So you're the diva now around Coolmore. You only blue M&Ms and have your slippers waiting at the door. That's where we're headed.
I wouldn't have thought so.
You're under quarantine, I would presume, now for a while.
Yeah, that's it. 2 weeks of no race riding and just kind of self-isolating here now, which was a pity because I was looking forward to going into work this morning and seeing everyone and just thanking them for everything. Like I've got, as well as colleagues there now at this stage, I have a lot of very, very close friends there. As I said, I haven't been there for a few years. And just to go in and, I suppose, share it with them and get their thanks and the well done off them. I saw a good few videos the weekend of, you know, them roaring me home and obviously getting text messages all weekend as well. It's been a bit mad. I haven't had a chance to reply to half of them yet. So I apologise to anyone who I haven't, but I will be on at some stage. And if I do miss anyone, it's by accident rather than design. So, like I said, a couple of weeks isolation, but time to watch a few replays, reply to a few messages, do all those kind of things. So it's not the worst thing in the world. And it's all in the interest of, you know, job that they've done here in Ireland suppressing this virus. You know, we want to make sure that it stays that way, but hopefully we can continue to move forward and that it won't always be this way, that we can get out of self-isolating when we come back, and that, but that'll obviously be decided by government and at government level, you know. But yeah. I'll be happy when we can move out of that, and I think everyone else in the country will be as well. It'll be well deserved after a tough few months for a lot of people.
No, for sure. And look, if you had to stew on something for 2 weeks, then I think an Epsom Derby win isn't the worst thing to have to stew on for the 2 weeks. Did you feel, kind of a last point, you had the ability to do this? Because I was reading different people complimenting the ride that you gave Serpentine, and you know, you referenced the pacing and complimenting the way you struck a good pace and you judged things really beautifully, you know. So does that, and we're talking the elite of the elite here, does that prove something to you, do you feel, or prove something to, well, I guess others, in so much as you care about other people, but even to yourself, you can now look at the ride that you, the performance you put in, and that's mixing it with the best of the best. Did you always have a rock solid belief in yourself, or maybe there's insecurities there that maybe a win like this puts to bed a little bit? What's been your mindset?
I don't want to sound cocky, but I was confident that if the horse was good enough, that hopefully I would be as well too. Mm. You know what I mean?
That's okay. Confidence is good too.
You know, look, it was one of those things where the horse was beautifully trained. He was an easy ride. You know what I mean? It was easy kind of get it right. So I was confident that if things worked out, that hopefully I'd be good enough if the horse was. And that's the way it worked out. But I suppose that some of the praise I've been getting, in fairness, unbelievable. Like some of my heroes have been texting me, you know, Pat Smullen, Barry Gertie. I'm going to leave out a few here now, unfortunately. Fran Berry, Declan McDonough. Even just talking to Ger Lyons the other day as well, he was delighted for me. He's been a huge part of my career before I came down here as well. Just to hear him say how delighted he was for me to ride the winner, and he sent me on a link today with Steve Cawthon praising the ride and that. So it's kind of been unbelievable, really, to be honest. But I suppose the difference between me and those guys is they do it consistently day in, day out. I just possibly produce an okay ride on the day, but the difference is they have been doing it for year in, year out, and I'll be forever in their awe now. So for them to give me compliments is fantastic. They're the real, real top guys.
Well, listen, delighted to see you get a day like this, and it's amazing. Epsom Derby winner, Emmett McNamara. Thanks so much, Emmett. Cheers.
Thanks very much for having me on.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.